This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 6th of May 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today I'm joined by the theatre critic Donald Hutera to give me the lowdown on some of this month's best theatre spectacles to book into your diary. There's a couple of reproductions in the form of the musical Gypsy and David Mamet's American Buffalo. And we'll also discuss a newer play called Gollum, which debuted last year in Salzburg. That is all ahead on the Arts Review here on Monocle 24. Let's kick things off with a song and a dance in Gypsy. This is showing at the Savoy in London and was first shown in 1959, directed by Jerome Robbins. This latest rendition of the play, which is an adaptation of Arthur Lawrence's book Memoirs of Gypsy Rose Lee, stars Imelda Staunton and has been dubbed the definitive production of Gypsy for a generation. Donald, do you agree with that?
I don't see why not. I wholeheartedly endorse that statement. She's great. The show's great. I mean, it starts out as a great show, but they know how to deliver it. That's the thing. It's so charged with emotion and that wonderful, wonderful tingle that the best musicals give. I do love this show, so I did have a kind of positive prejudice walking in, and I think Imelda's terrific. But it's all true. Everything you read is true.
That's good. I mean, it's interesting. You say if you sort of go in with a preconceived notion that you like something, you could almost argue that you're going to be more particular about how well realized the production is, how great the performances that the star turns put in, given you're a fan already. So in some ways, that makes you eminently well qualified.
Yeah, but what I noticed about the audience is everybody seemed attuned to what was going on in that stage, and they got it. And they can't all have known that. Well, maybe they do all know that show. I don't know. Maybe it's catering to Gypsy fans who haven't seen the piece for 40 years, because it hasn't been done here in about 40 years. But it's so good and so watertight in its way that, I mean, I was tearing up at the overture when the brass blew in. And then by the end, which culminates in this mountain climbing peak of a number for the Imelda Staunton character. She plays the classic stage mother, a monster mother that we really, really root for. And she's so desperate to be recognized. And all of that is poured into her two daughters, one of whom became the very famous stripper, Gypsy Rose Lee.
Now, a lot of the reviewers say, you know, this is, you know, it is Staunton's show. You know, she dominates it. She sort of owns it. And I get that sense from what you're saying, that you sort of go along with that. She's certainly got the, I don't know what it is. It's kind of stagecraft. It's a bit of bravura. She's got the stuff. She's got the lot. Yeah.
She's got it in pouring out of every cell in her body. And there's this wonderful line that she says about if I could have been, I would have been. You know, but which sums up for me the kind of whole showbiz ethos and that desire to be a success. She's pursuing the American dream. Mm. What makes this really complex and I think quite moving and beautiful is she's doing it through her kids. So it's a lot about mothers and daughters and sisters and family. And it's a lot too about the end of an era, the vaudeville era. But it still speaks to today, because there are still people pursuing their goals and possibly damaging their family members. But there's something so rich about it beyond those surface pleasures that American musicals in particular, I think, can give. Mm. But it has depth. That's the thing. It's got loads of depth.
We talked a little bit on this Arts Review program about the sort of, I don't know if to call it a revival exactly of musicals, but certainly there seems to be a reconnection, I think, maybe from the viewing public about how they're consuming their musical theatre. Do you think that is something that's happening? Do you think it's because we're just seeing, you know, one great production after another, or is it something wider?
Well, what I would like to see, and this is sort of an indirect answer, is perhaps a more discerning public taste.
You may have to hold your breath for that one, I fear.
Yeah. I know, but that's what's so heartening about this show and that it's such a hit. It's running till at least November and maybe be extended, blah, blah, blah. Because it is a truly, truly great show. It's not just a commercial product. There's, it reminds me of in Chicago when Roxy Hart or Valmar, one of those characters, talks about all the love pouring back and forth across the footlights. But that's what you can feel in the auditorium because this is so well crafted. It's operating at such a high level that all of that, it transcends its genre, any genre mediocrities. It hits the heights.
That's a pretty...
To borrow a line from the show itself.
Exactly. And that's Gypsy, which is on at the Savoy in London until the 28th of November. I did mention just at the start that it could be the sort of the definitive performance of this. It's obviously tricky sometimes to bandy that sort of label around, but it's good enough to potentially be exactly that, you think?
Well, there's Ethel Merman. I never saw the Angela Lansbury on Broadway in the 70s, I think it was. Tyne Daly did it. But because it's such a big role, it's the King Lear of female musical roles. It's a whopper, and she has got what it takes to deliver it. But it is so well packaged. If it is a star vehicle, it's a supremely well packaged star vehicle.
Very good stuff. Let's move on and talk a little bit about American Buffalo, the 1975 play that put David Mamet squarely on the playwright's map. It follows the story of a heist gone wrong. This production stars Damian Lewis, John Goodman and Tom Sturridge, all names known particularly well on screen, big and small. How do they fare on the stage? Because it can sometimes be a transition that suits some of you a little better than others.
It's pretty good. I was impressed with it. It's a sort of male thespian three-ring circus. And I know I was reading a colleague who was saying that it's a bit all over the place, that they're playing in different keys. I'm not so, and that was used as a negative. I think they're playing in different keys because they're playing different characters and they all have different motives. So Goodman is a sort of warm, avuncular figure. Damian Lewis, who is playing somebody, he's got a porn mustache and a burgundy suit with flares.
A lot of coverage of his facial furniture for this one, yeah.
And then Tom Sturridge, who for me, because I don't know his work all that well, is the real revelation as this snivelly, shaven-headed, pathetic druggy type.
And it's an interesting change because he's usually a bit more sort of dynamic, glamorous presence on the screen. He is this very sort of pathetic, damaged character. Often that's a kind of is it easier for an actor if you're making that transformation, you know, playing against type somewhat rather than just displaying slightly different nuances as maybe the other two leads are?
Well, no, I don't think so, because it's a hard role to get right. I think it's a pivotal role. It's not the most showy role, but that pathos that he brings to it, there's a real emotional core here. And just like Gypsy, this is another American play about the American dream, because it's about a small town heist, and it's tragic and comic because they're so incompetent at it. But it may be small time in the bigger picture, but to them, of course, it's not, because it's the play itself is about betrayal and trust and loyalty and the male capacity for violence and for forgiveness. So it does all this. It communicates all of that with this very low life rhythm, punctuated by a lot of swear words.
Well, I was going to say, people talk about, you know, David Mamet as being, you know, one of the great stage masters, you know, a brilliant sort of playwright, screenwriter, this sort of thing. Sometimes people say, it can almost sort of interfere that the veracity of the writing, that this realism, it can be hyper real, it can be too in your face. Do you ever find that with his work or with this play in particular, that it makes it almost hard to watch, or is that kind of part of the craft?
No, I don't think it makes it hard to watch. I think he taps into the lingo, and he really, really knows how to use it. And the actors know how to play it. That's the thing. It's very, very playable. So, I don't know if it's not as immediately, this is a great production, but it's very much worth seeing. I valued my time with those three men and those three actors because, you know, it is a piece of theater after all. But I learned things, I think, about the American male and men in general. Just he does shed some light on what many playwrights, a subject many playwrights tackle, which is the, you know, the whole male psyche, male behavior.
Absolutely. Well, we talked a bit about Tom Sturridge's sort of transformation on stage. What about John Goodman? Because it's sort of a delight, I guess, for many theater goers to see this, you know, incredibly well-known, very sort of charismatic actor. Again, perhaps best known for his, you know, big screen and small screen work. I think particularly some of the slightly almost macabre characters he's played in, you know, Coen Brothers movies, for example. He's a bit more sort of genial and affable. What about his, the way he inhabits the stage? Do you think that it's a transformation, a sort of a journey that he makes very easily?
I think he does make it easily. But of the three of them, he's the one who is probably making the least stretch. Which is not to discredit what he does, because he's the emotional, and this isn't just a Flintstone joke. He's the bedrock of this production, but he needs to be, because the Damian Lewis character is quite flashy. It's in some ways because of that porn mustache and the flares. He's not just operating on the surface, but there's a lot of surface pleasure out of that.
Right.
Goodman doesn't have that, and like unlike Sturridge, he doesn't have the shaven-headed, pathetic, damaged thing going. He's the sort of foundation between these three men. You know, the triangle. He's the bottom part of the triangle. But I think the play needs that.
And just very briefly, Damian Lewis. We've sort of talked about all three. I mean, read reviews. He's been described as, you know, as a revelatory performance. Would you go so far as that, or do you think it's a solid piece of work, nice, you know, solid stagecraft, but he's not rewriting the book.
I didn't think so. I think the for me the revelation was Tom Sturridge, but it's a very entertaining performance, you know, it's a role that Pacino has played and Dustin Hoffman in the 1996 film, and I think Damian Lewis, you know, he makes it his own, but it's a fine piece of work, but I wouldn't go so far as to say revelation.
Lovely stuff. You can judge for yourself. American Buffalo is on at Wyndham's Theatre in London until the end of June. Let's finish the show by talking a little bit about Gollum. This is a much newer play compared to the others we've talked about thus far. It premiered last year at the Salzburg Festival and is made by Company 1927. Donald, perhaps tell us a little bit about maybe the people behind this play before we get to the storyline. What's this sort of group all about?
Well, there's a woman, the writer and director is Suzanne Andrade. That's how I'd say her name, A-N-D-R-A-D-E. And she works with a designer and animator named Paul Barrett. And they specialize in live action and animation combinations as vehicles for fantasy and satire. And this particular piece, Gollum, is based on a figure in Jewish folklore who's, in essence, an anthropomorphized, made-up creature who will do people's bidding and has a sinister side. And they've tied this in. It's kind of a retro-futurist cautionary fable. And rather dazzlingly put together. They really know what they're doing, and they haven't been around that long, but they broke onto the scene a few years ago. I first saw them at the Edinburgh Fringe, and they've really caught on internationally because they're so skilled at what they do.
And it's interesting you talk about these themes of, you know, being bent to will and the ideas of dependency, and I'm sure probably a lot of people in the modern technological age, call it what you like, will find that there are some of those historical notes about dependency and these characters from you know, old legend and this sort of thing that are probably as relevant or more relevant almost now than ever before.
Well, it's the show is set both in the workplace and on the street, so they're very smart, because even though it's quite a throwback in its terms of its style, it still does have a relevance, because it's very much about the way we live now and also about our dreams, not American dreams, but about dreams of how we communicate, how we can succeed, what we can accomplish, and how sometimes that can take over our lives. That's what this Gollum figure represents. It's got a real charm. and a unique flavor. I did find it stretched itself out at 90 minutes.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this because a couple of the reviews have suggested that while it makes its points very creatively with great ingenuity and a lot of elan and flair, it's maybe a little, I don't know, over-insistent? Is that possibly because it's running a little long? Or is that more to do with the tone of it? Is it slightly too insistent, perhaps?
Well, I wonder if it's got something to do with a company that starts out on the fringes and becomes quite successful. I'm not saying they've betrayed their own talent or that it isn't done with integrity. But the larger scale you get when you start from very intimate, because I remember the theater I saw, you know, seated about 60 or 70 people, and now they're
a world away, isn't it?
Yeah. Very much. And now that they're you know spinning around the world with this show, you know, perhaps that's why. I don't think I think they needed a bit of an editor. That's all. Mm. But it's still it's high quality stuff, and there is a precedent for it. I mean, others have done live action and animation, and I'm thinking of a company that's more or less, they're not exactly dormant, but have you heard of Forkbeard Fantasy, which are based in Southwest England?
Possibly, yeah.
They did actually much wackier spins on animation and live action. In some ways, this is almost too safe and tidy in a way.
Right.
I'd like it to be a little more manic.
A little riskier. Do you think, I mean, that's interesting to consider that journey that you've described there from, you know, these smaller beginnings to, you know, quite a rapid path to quite big success. Do you think that is I guess that's a challenge that a lot of creative people have to try and, you know, navigate those waters. Are you confident that they've got enough creativity? You mentioned there's no question about their sort of creative integrity. Mm-hmm. You'd be pretty confident we'll continue to see sort of inspiring and challenging works from them in the years ahead, for example.
I think 1927 has a lot of mileage in them. I guess the thing that I always get concerned about, whether it's in dance or theater, is how people, when same old sets in as opposed to signature style. This isn't same old, but and it is important perhaps in the marketplace and aesthetically to have a signature style. They do, and I'm interested to see if they can maybe pull and push themselves a bit further next time. But it's again, another really fine piece of work.
And a great evening. Your last night on Earth, Donald, and you had to go and see one of those this week. Put you on the spot for a moment. Which would it be?
Oh, without question, Gypsy. No, I could go see that show right now and tomorrow night as well.
There you go. You don't get a much more enthusiastic endorsement than that.
I'll start singing in a minute if you're not careful.
It's going to be the new version of the Arts Review. Donald Zotero, thanks very much. And I should point out that Gollum, which was the last we talked about, is on at the Young Vic in London until the 22nd, and then it will be travelling around the world. Donald Zotero, thanks very much for joining us on the programme today. This has been the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks to our producer, Holly Fisher, and researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. The Week in Books will be up for discussion. Until then, it's goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening.